It's dark, cold, inhospitable.
All crew members to your stations. Prepare for landing.
Hello and you're very welcome to the Roy Harper Podcast. This is number 11 for July 2008. In this episode, we will have an interview with Chris Politsky. We'll have the A to Z of Harper, this time the letter K. We'll have some listener feedback, including a couple of rare treats and a wide selection of music. Now, talking of music, the background track to this introduction is Theme 1, a cover version by a group called Fruits de Mer. Now, these people came to my attention via the Peter Hamill mailing list, which I'm a member of, and Van de Graaff Generator famously covered Theme 1, which was the old Radio 1 theme tune. And I played the Van de Graaff Generator version at my wedding. I actually had it play as we walked away after having signed the register, and it probably gave most of the people in the hall, a complete shock, not knowing about my musical proclivities, but I loved it. Anyway, so this single came out recently, and of course I snapped a copy of it up, and I got in touch with the band and said, would you mind if I gave a little mention to it on the Roy Harper Podcast? And they were very keen to do that, so of course I thought I'd play a bit from it. Now, you can find out more from the MySpace page, myspace.com/FDMER, and from there you can order the single. And I love it personally, and I think you might like it too. There'll be the other side of the single a bit later on in the podcast, so you can hear the cover version of Odgen's Nut Gone Flake, which accompanies the Theme 1. Now on to the first music pick for this month, and I've chosen Dancing All the Night from the Dream Society album. Now, when that album first came out, there was an accompanying CD which was full of, it was kind of a promotional item with Roy introducing samples from each of the tracks, and I thought it might be interesting to play this with that introduction from Roy at the beginning. I'd like to dedicate this track to Darren Crisp. Cheers, mate.
Dancing All the Night is a song that I wrote for my mother. She died 3 or 4 weeks after I was born. And it's a song about the fantasy I have of dancing with her all the night, which, of course, I've done anyway all these years. I often see her in a kind of psychic mirror, just in the not in an actual mirror, but in the shape of what I'm doing at the time, which can be really revealing. The song starts skiffleish but a bit heavier. I'm a child of World War II, of course, and there were bluebirds over the white cliffs of Dover in the morning, just you wait and see. Of course I did. And there are many kind of freedoms that we've fought for ever since. Freedom of speech. All those things. She would have known Spitfires and the stories of dogfights and all of that.
When I was a little baby, my Manchester, and I'm killing fields back home. She died in the middle of the summer, in a soaking wet wilderness, fighting for the flame of life, dodging the bullet and the drummer, till the devil inside her bayoneted his beautiful wife. Oh, so long, so long the night. Oh, so young to be taken from this life. Oh, so young. Muriel, you turned me on to heaven, found yourself in hell. Dear Mother Muriel, dancing in your shadow, I know you oh so well, like no one other. I'll forgive you for leaving me here, it's a beautiful place. Always seems like I'm holding you near in endless embrace. Cruising the room with amazing grace. We'll be dancing all the night. We'll be dancing all the night. We'll be dancing all the night in the moonlight. We'll be dancing all the night. We'll be dancing all the night. We'll be dancing all the night in the moonlight. We'll be dancing all the night. Muriel, I must have always sussed you. I guess I always will. I live in wonder, Muriel. I must have always kissed you. One kiss and I can tell. Blood, love, and thunder. I'll forgive you for leaving me here in this beautiful place. Always feels like I'm holding you near in endless embrace. Cruising the room with amazing grace. We'll be dancing all the night. We'll be dancing all the night. We'll be dancing all the night in the moonlight. We'll be dancing all the night. We'll be dancing all the night. We'll be dancing all the night in the moonlight. Do da 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 da. La da 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 dancing all the night.
So this month I've got Chris Politsky with me for an interview. Now, Chris contacted me through MySpace. As you may know, the podcast has got a presence on MySpace as well as Facebook and all kinds of other places. And he was interested in sort of doing something more with the podcast. And I thought, well, I haven't actually had an American on as a guest yet. And it'd be really interesting to get a kind of perspective of somebody over the other side of the pond for how they cope with being a Roy Harper fan and what it's like over there. So, hi there, Chris, and welcome to the Roy Harper podcast.
I wonder if
we can start off with a bit of introduction, just a bit about who you are, what your age is, where you live, what you do for a living, that kind of thing.
Sure. I'm 39 years old. Live in Westminster, Colorado, which is a suburb of Denver, Colorado. And I am interested in music, obviously. I do play the guitar. Mm-hmm. I work for an internet Yellow Pages company doing design work and now moving into what's called the SEO field, which is search engine optimization, mainly known as a graphics person. So
right.
I guess you could call me a sort of a pixel wizard, so to speak. My interests also are related to playing ice hockey. I do like to play ice hockey, and I enjoy hiking. We have wonderful scenery here. We're very close to the Rocky Mountains.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
And that's about it.
Right, okay. So you're, was it 7 hours behind the UK? Because I'm calling you at 5 p.m. on a Sunday, and it's, what is it, 11 a.m.
Yeah, it's 10 a.m. here, that's
10
correct.
AM. Yeah, okay. Nice early Sunday for you. Nice late one for me, you know.
I'm an early riser anyway, right. So that's great.
Well, I suppose the obvious next question then, Chris, is how did you get involved with Roy Harper? How did it all start? How did you hear about him and what happened after that?
I probably heard about him through the Jugular album, being a big Zeppelin fan, right. And kind of explored it from there. And I don't know how. It might have been in a Rolling Stone magazine that I found out about the hors d'oeuvres fanzine and contacted Darren and Dave, and they were quite surprised to hear that an American was interested in their fanzine.
What year would that have been? Do you have any idea?
I would say late 80s, 86, 87, somewhere in that area.
Oh, that's interesting. That's about the time I got into him as well, actually. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I had listened to Roy, you know, previous to that, obviously, from the Jugular album, and kept poking into record shops around here. And actually, I did have some success finding some items, and was quite pleased to hear some of the older backlog stuff, like When an Old Cricketer Leaves the Crease and that sort of stuff.
That was pre-CD, I suppose, was it? Or was it post-CD? Were you getting
it all
vinyl?
It was all vinyl.
Yeah.
Yep.
I can remember the search for the vinyl albums, and it almost felt like you were on a quest for the Holy Grail when you finally found it, you know.
Oh, I was on a mission. Every store I went into, I went to the H section and explored it, and here and there, I did find some items, and I even found a video. I believe it was the Once video, which I can speak about later because I did attend that show.
Brilliant. Okay. So you started getting this stuff. You started finding the vinyl, and you spoke to Darren and Dave. Did you hear the Darren Crisp interview that we did a few episodes ago?
I did. Yeah. I did, and that's what kind of kindled my interest to put my two cents worth, and I'd like to say hello to Darren and Eric and everyone.
Oh, cool. Yeah, he's a lovely fella. He really is.
He's great.
I need to get him back in at some point to do, you know, we only skated around the tip of the iceberg, so to speak, when he came and did his two-hour interview. There's so much more he can say, so I'm hoping to get him back.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm sure he's got quite a lot to say.
So, okay, what is it that grabbed you initially? I mean, I know Juggler is actually a pretty strong album to start off with. Obviously, you've got Page on there as well, and the songwriting's brilliant. Really strong album. But, I mean, what is it that grabbed you about it all, would you say?
It was real funny. As I explored the backlog of Roy's material, I kind of sensed this having heard him before, and I was trying to figure out where it was from. His voice sounded so familiar. His musical technique sounded so familiar. Mm. I had to explore it, and I kept asking relatives, did you happen to know a musician by the name of Roy Harper and play them when I was younger? Because it sounded so familiar. And nobody ever fessed up to actually knowing this musical artist, Roy Harper. And in fact, I just had to keep collecting things to put my notions at rest that nobody really had played it when I was younger.
That's really interesting. So it was like instantly familiar in some way.
Very much so.
Have you ever worked out why that is? Is it because his style has been kind of permeated through other artists and it was familiar in that way, do you think? Or just that it's hit some sort of resonance with you? What do you think it is?
Yeah, I think it struck a chord inside me. And his material is so very different from what we have available here in the U.S. I can't really imagine that I would have thought he sounded very familiar or similar to another artist.
Mm. Well, you know, at one point he was called the English Bob Dylan, but that was in the early days, you know, acoustic songs. And he kind of played to that title for a little while. But then, of course, well, you know, as well as most of the people listening, probably that every album's completely different. And the range of styles that he's covered over his career has been, you know, very wide. So
yes, that's funny that you bring up the Bob Dylan connection. I remember was it the Les Cousins? I don't know which concert it was, but he mimicked North Country.
He did a Dylan impersonation, and it was really
exactly
good. yeah. Actually,
yeah.
Maybe I'll put that on as one of the tracks this month. Actually,
oh yeah,
since
that'd be great.
Yeah, why not? We're kind of merging into the next question on my list, really, but.
Sure.
You're a US-based Roy Harper fan. Now, in the late 80s and through the 90s, particularly for me, I was in a very fortunate position because Roy gigged enormously in this small island, and I went to an enormous number of gigs. Mm-hmm. And almost, you know, I lost count, don't know how many it was, and every gig was different. And in the early days of setting up the Stormcock mailing list, I used to get these impassioned pleas from people in the States and people in Australia and whatnot saying, will you please write up what it was like mm-hmm. in the gigs you went to, because we've got bugger all hope of actually seeing him live. And I felt really sorry for people that didn't have access to the kind of on-tap gigs that we had at that time. So I suppose the next question is, what's it like being a Roy Harper fan in the US, and have you seen him live, and, you know, what's your take on that?
It's very difficult being a fan here. I'm very jealous that you've been to so many gigs. Mm. And I have been to gigs. My first set was in 1990 when I joined up on the Once tour, in November, I believe. And the first gig I saw him at was very special because it was on my, I believe, 22nd birthday, November 19th.
Oh, that's good.
At the Free Trade Hall. And I gathered up enough courage to give Roy a photograph that I had done. I'm a photography major when I went to school. Mm. And at that time, he had a sore throat, so he couldn't talk much. And Jackie at the time came over and mentioned that he couldn't talk much. So I just said, save your voice for the show. But I'd given him the photograph, and I think it actually had been used on the first iteration of his website as the front page. It was a black and white photo of two guitars laying in a field with blankets.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah.
And yeah. So I think I did three shows, Manchester, London, And then Milton Keynes was the third and final one that I went to, and that's where Roy actually dedicated 12 Hours of Sunset to me, and it really shocked me. As
that must have been a special night.
Oh, it was a very special night, and Darren was kind enough to grab a hold of a tape of the show and send it back over to me, so I cherish that very much.
I bet, yeah.
But other than the English tour in 1990, I've also been over to Canada to see him because that was the closest that he ever came to where I am in Colorado.
Was that when he was doing stuff with the Tea Party?
It was before that.
Okay.
And that was, I did see the night, that was in 93 with the Tea Party, and that time he had Nick along with him. And Nick's a great guy as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and the first Canadian tour was for the Mariposa Folk Festival in Toronto.
Was that the one where they had a revolving stage? I seem to remember there was kind of a big story about that, yeah.
Yeah, it was a revolving stage, and I think the Barenaked Ladies had played previously and were great fans of Roy's, actually, and were really impressed that he was playing that festival.
Mm.
And I've met some great people there, Steve, Christina, Don, Gavin, Adriana, and all those other people. But really unfortunate to Darren that I was allowed to kind of hang out with Roy, Jackie, and them for the day, and travel around, go to music stores, and have a lunch with them, and really get to know what their world was. And just realizing that they're normal people as well.
Oh yeah, I'm glad you said that. I've been banging on about that a bit recently as well. You know, you revere the artists and they do wonderful stuff, but they're normal people as well, and it's good to make that sort of connection.
That doesn't mean I don't get nervous every time I see him, but you know.
Yeah,
and then I had made another English tour in 1995. And this was when Nick was playing with Roy.
Oh, right.
And I think that was when Nick's CD, Seed, was coming out. And I had hopped off the train in Marlboro, and he was playing that night at the Town Hall, I believe.
Mm.
And he saw me with a backpack and a guitar strung over my back. So he said, "What do you got in the case?" And we chatted up, and actually, he said, "Yeah, I just released my CD. Would you like a copy?" And I said, "Yeah." And he also told me I was the first customer to buy it. So,
well done.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I think that's true, you know, which is kind of unusual being an American to be the first person buying the
album. Well, you were in the right place at the right time, I guess.
Yeah.
That first album he did was a lovely sort of indication of things to come, I suppose.
Really, oh, yeah.
Beautiful acoustic stuff.
Yeah. I remember Tony Pugh, I hope that's the right pronunciation.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Commenting to Nick as he was listening, because we, at that time, I was doing some roadie work with Tony, stripping down and everything, but we were listening to the CD in between gigs, and Tony was just so complimentary about what Nick was doing on the album. "How did you get that baritone voice?" And Nick, I think, chimed in and said, "Oh, it's late night drinking whiskey or something."
That sounds completely like Nick.
Yeah.
Actually, talking of Tony Pugh, Tony's an old friend of mine as well, and I keep trying to persuade him to come on to do an interview because I think he'd have a lot of fun things to say, but he says that most of them would end up with him being lynched by Roy on it, because he knows too many stories with dubious overtones, so which makes me all the now, more determined to get him on, actually. But there you go.
How long has he been with Roy?
Good question. Oh, a long time.
Because I was wondering if in 1990, when I was there for the Once tour at the Dominion Theatre, if he was there. And I think that's when I met you, Paul, if I'm not mistaken.
It's funny. While we've been talking, I've suddenly realised, yeah, I think it was, you know. Yeah, because, I mean, obviously I was there as well. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, it was real briefly. And
yeah.
That I was only there for a week, too, so it was a very quick tour.
Well, one of the nice things about the whole Harper situation at gigs and so on is that you meet so many people for the first time, and you already know you've got a lot in common with them. And it's, I've said it before, but music is this great kind of, it tears down barriers between people. And mm-hmm. I it's wonderful just talking to people before or after a gig and saying how it went and all that. And it's just such a lovely sort of community that builds up around these things.
Yeah, it was funny. When I was doing the tour in 1995, and we played a festival, I believe, in Stainsbury, I believe. And some fans, we were walking. Yeah, okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's all right. I've got a T-shirt.
Stainsbury. And we were walking around after setting up, and some fans approached me, and I think they knew I was an American and were very curious about how I had joined up as a roadie for the tour, if I can call myself that. I mean, I wasn't that helpful, just plugging in cables. And
I have done the same things for Tony once or twice as well, and I'm not sure how useful I was either, but he was very gracious.
yeah, definitely. So they just wanted to know, and I couldn't believe that they really approached me and couldn't understand that, you know, I was just a fan, and you could probably be doing this as well. I just felt in an awkward situation by them asking me.
Mm. Okay, so we're in the sort of mid-90s now, I suppose.
Uh-huh.
And you'd done some gigs and stuff. I mean, has it been relatively quiet for you since then on the live front, or have you managed to do anything else?
It has been quiet. The mid-90s were kind of my heyday with Roy, if you want to call it that. And I cherish every moment that I had and really appreciate that everyone let me in. And especially to Roy and Nick. Nick's been a great friend. And sitting down with him in Canada before he ever got any albums out, and him being so nervous before the gig.
Oh, he really used to be terrible, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And and he also, I think, asked me, because he heard that I was into photography, if I could do an album cover and shoot him at the Mariposa Folk Festival. So I did a half-hearted attempt. I mean, I think I was too nervous and the photos didn't come out very well, but I did send them over. They didn't obviously make it to the album, but it was a fun experience. And I think in 95, if I'm not mistaken, Roy was starting to communicate with Tracy.
Mm.
And she was making a Appalachian Trail trek, I believe, at the time. So they were in communication via phone, and I think I remember him before the gigs trying to call her. Tracy had also been taking over the responsibility of, I think, changing strings and the sort for Roy. And I remember a few gigs her off in the corner changing strings. And Tracy was real nice. And her being from America, I think we could also relate to each other.
Oh, yeah.
And I hope not too many people are making fun of my accent, because I know.
Not at all. I don't see why anybody would. I mean, you know, the thing is, it's a global thing now, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
There's no need to do any kind of national rubbish about, you know, accents and outlooks and so on.
Just the state of things in the world right now, I don't think the Americans are too kindly looked upon, so that's the only reason.
Well, you're one of the Americans that, I'm going to sound really patronising now, and I don't mean to be, I'm sorry about that, but I've had people come up before and say, I'm from America and I'm really, really sorry. it's a huge nation. Now, it's a melting pot. There's going to be different attitudes and so on. And unfortunately, from my point of view, who you've got in charge at the moment doesn't fit in with my outlook on life at all. But then neither does the English government, you know. But as people of sensibility and intelligence, we have to work with what we're given and do what we can within the boundaries of our lives, I think. Getting a bit serious there for a minute, but that's how I feel about it.
That's true, Paul, yeah.
Mm. Mm. Do you know any other Harper fans in the US?
Here in the US?
Yeah.
I think I had met on one of the Canadian tours a couple from Chicago, and here in Colorado, I try and introduce my friends to Roy, but it's really difficult. They don't get into it, and I just can't understand it. I keep pounding them, hey, listen. He's played with David Gilmour. He's played with Kate Bush. Give it a try.
A very familiar story for me as well. And I used to really be a bit overbearing about the whole thing. These days, I just say, well, you know, it's worth it. Take it from me. If you spend a bit of time listening to this stuff, it will make your life better. But most people aren't interested, and that's the way it goes. But I've never really understood why.
Yeah, I haven't understood why either. I have a musician friend, and she still is active in the music scene here in Denver. And I'd given her a CD or album at the time, I can't remember, but after hearing his material and then hearing my material, she saw where the influences came from.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Style of play.
Yeah. That's one of the things about music, because you know that every musician is not isolated from everybody else, so you kind of get this constantly evolving stuff that's based on stuff that's clicked with the musician from what they've heard in the past. It's kind of an evolving thing. And every now and then, you know, you'll get somebody that comes up with something dramatically different, some new idea. I mean, you know, the early folk auto-tuning finger-picking stuff, I suppose, was quite revolutionary. But, yeah.
Yeah, the finger-picking stuff I really got into by Roy. And just so incredible. Keeping down that bass rhythm and then adding the melody line with the other fingers. And Nick, I can't believe Nick. He's just so amazing.
Well, I think he's gone down to the crossroads and taken a lesson from Robert Johnson, because there's so much talent there. It has to come from somewhere.
Yeah.
No, he's amazing, absolutely amazing. What do you think, if anything, the pair of them could do to better break into the US or anywhere really? Can you think of anything that they could do better to promote themselves?
I think they're so very English, it's hard to break into the American market.
Right.
And they're really speaking a lot to the English situation oftentimes, and sometimes it goes over my head being American. I don't understand it, but I just enjoy the music. And when they're talking more global matters, I think it might be more marketable towards them. But I often toyed with the idea of, why didn't Roy maybe join up on the Pink Floyd tour when they reunited without Roger Waters back in the late 80s?
Mm.
Either do an opening show or actually sing with David Gilmour and the rest of the guys.
Interesting. But
Or on the other hand, go to a Zeppelin, and there are a lot of talks about the reunification of the band.
Yeah.
Why doesn't he do an opening slot for them, maybe introduce himself to this market over here?
So from the sound of it, you think that his kind of association with the Zepps and the Floyds and the Kate Bush and everything else is probably a good thing on balance for him? Because I expressed some reservations in the last podcast saying that in a way it kind of clouded him as an artist in his own right. But you think on the whole it's a good thing, do you?
I do, because it introduces his music to a lot more people. I don't know if I would have found him without that connection.
Yeah, same here probably.
Yeah, probably you would have had more of an opportunity than myself, being so close over in England. I think it's difficult. I think Nick is doing a great job. He supported Squeeze coming over here, and I actually passed through a couple dates in Colorado. I think it was in 2000, and unfortunately I missed his call for the second gig because he had given me a phone call and left two tickets at the door, but already purchased tickets.
Oh, it's a nice gesture.
That was tough luck. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. All right. The next question. I mean, this is something I ask everybody. Really, what is the stuff that really does it for you? What's your favorite material? What's your favourite album, if you like? Or if it's not a favourite album, what's your favourite kind of style? Is it the acoustic stuff? Is it the band stuff? What is it that really clicks for you?
It's hard to say because I like the softer stuff and I like the heavier stuff. One man rock and roll band, I just love when gets so intense with the distortion and the delays, and especially live, that is just phenomenal. But then I go back to the songs like Evening Star, which just is such a beautiful song, or Broken Wing, that's just, it just resonates somewhere inside me. Just wonderful. But I would have to say, as far as dislikes go, some of the earlier stuff, I think he was still finding his way and didn't quite find his voice yet. Mm-hmm. And I can kind of sense that he didn't quite get there yet. And I listen to, but I'm not so fond of it. And some of the later stuff I'm having difficulties relating to, and I'm not sure if perhaps he's changing his singing style, but it's just some kind of sense that maybe his voice is going through a change and he's trying something different, which right. I think every artist should do, is always be different. It just hasn't hit me as hard as some of the earlier stuff.
Yeah, I mean, obviously his voice has gone down a couple of tones, and that will happen to anybody.
Right, and that's why he tunes the guitar down, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, when he had that major surgery, when he had his, what we affectionately called spring-loaded lungs, when he had the whole, not bypass, there was a whole thing about improving his breathing and circulation, his voice seemed to kick into another gear altogether, and the power was back. And I think from the power point of view, his voice is extremely strong now. But the songwriting on The Green Man, it is different. And there's been people on the podcast ranting about that before, saying, why can't he get back to the angry stuff? But everybody,
yeah, more the angry stuff, or the epics. And like the Lord's Prayer, if you could do another version of that and bring it out and just please everybody for another 20 years.
Okay, well, you know, we'll keep our fingers crossed on that one.
yeah.
So is there any one song that you really, really dislike, just as a fun question? Any throwaway song?
What was the one with about the motorway and the
Watford Gap, you mean?
Watford Gap, yeah. Right. Yeah, that's just a play song to me, and I think he did it out of being maybe playful in the studio and wanting something happy to do, but it doesn't really do anything for me.
Yeah, there's a few like that. Although actually, Watford Gap to me is a fun song, but I like it now because he got into trouble legally, and there was that whole thing about the EMI board member being on the board of the Blue Boar Services, and that's why it actually got squashed initially. And from that point of view, I actually like the song now, but only because of the political ridiculousness of what surrounded the song. The song itself is not too good, but yeah, I mean, the Methane Zone off of the Death or Glory, the single that came out, is in that category for me as well. And actually,
you don't enjoy the Death or Glory?
No. The Methane Zone. The song.
Oh, right.
No. Death or Glory is wonderful. Yeah, but he had that throwaway single. And he also has that last track on Juggler as well, which, you know.
Yeah, that's another one. Yeah. Okay. Just to finish up the album, sometimes I think he throws in an extra one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he does. Now, one other thing I'm always keen to hear about from people is, apart from the Harper stuff, everybody likes a wide selection of music, and it's pretty hard these days to discover new artists in an easy way. I mean, you don't hear them on the radio most often. You hear about them from other people. Or if you're lucky, you discover them on MySpace or what have you. So what else are you into?
Have you ever tried Pandora?
Pandora, you can't get in the UK anymore. They had
because this is great.
They had a licensing problem, and they had to cut off access to the UK. I did used to listen to it, yeah.
Yeah, it was great how it would align your interest for an artist and then they would recommend other artists and play them in a set list. I'm sure you're familiar with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, well, Last.fm is meant to be doing the same stuff now, and that is UK accessible, but I haven't tried it yet. I should do that. It's a good idea.
I see.
But is there anybody in particular that you'd like to, you know, draw people's attention to?
I have a mixed taste, really, and I mean, I really like Jeff Buckley.
Oh, yeah, brilliant.
And Ry Cooder, some of the slide work that he does.
Mm.
Luca Bloom, which I'm not... How is Luca Bloom accepted in England? I think he's from Ireland, isn't he?
I don't know. I don't really know him, actually.
Oh, he's a brilliant guitar player. I think, actually, Nick had introduced me to him and said, you got to check this guy out.
Mm.
So I explored that musician, and I would strongly recommend him.
Oh, okay.
But as far as some of the other people that I listen to, I like Mark Lanegan from the Screaming Trees.
Mm-hmm.
And he does a lot of stuff that's separate from the Screaming Trees. Right now they don't exist anymore, but some more acoustical stuff that I really enjoy. And there's a band by the name of Dinosaur Jr. And I guess that's more heavier
Dinosaur
side.
Dinosaur Jr., I've got one CD of theirs. It's called Where You Been.
Oh, that's one of the best. So you've got the good one. So, yeah, I like the distortion, and that's where my distortion side of...
Oh, well, from that point of view, I got heavily into Sonic Youth at one point, and I've got tons of their stuff as well, and lots of experimental guitar music and that kind of stuff I like.
Yeah, sure. Mm. Yeah. And there's a local band that doesn't exist anymore, but I feel that they were one of the best bands that ever came out of Denver, actually. They go by the name of 16 Horsepower, and they really melded a lot of different styles into one.
Mm.
They played on banjos, and they played on accordions. They actually call them bandonians, that were small versions of accordions, kind of like you saw on a circus show.
Yeah.
And stand-up basses and guitar and drums, but it had a real full sound and a very characteristic American sound, I would say. I didn't agree with the lyrics so much, but just the overall feel of the music was very, very intense.
That's and interesting.
Sorry, Paul.
No, I was going to say what you just said about not always agreeing with the lyrics. And some artists, I actually completely ignore the lyrics. It's quite weird. And other ones, I kind of really obsess about them and read them and try and sort of get behind what's going on. And I've never been able to work out why I do that for some artists and not for others. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, and I've tried to figure that out about Led Zeppelin, because there's a lot of times I can't understand what Robert's singing. And I don't know if he does that intentionally.
He does, I think.
Yeah, and it's every time I listen to a song, I'll notice something different that I had missed before.
Mm.
But I guess with the 16 Horsepower reference, they're a little bit too religious for me.
Right.
But a great performer, and he just really becomes possessed by the music when he does a live performance.
Mm. Another of my stock questions for you, just to see what your take on it is. I keep talking about the decline and fall, eventually, of the traditional music industry, the big conglomerate music companies and CD sales and, you know, record shops and so on. It's all going away. It's becoming more internet-based. Where do you think it's going to go? I mean, are we going to end up with no physical product at all, do you think?
Oh, I don't think that. I think we'll definitely have the product out. We're going to have a lot more choices.
Mm.
And I think Nick is on the right path where he's marketing himself. And, I mean, Roy is doing the same. But I think it's a real beneficial thing for the artists and the musicians really making a living out of what they're doing rather than the record company doing it.
Oh, completely. Yeah.
So I'm very much excited about the future of the music industry now.
Well, I think there's a lot more opportunity for somebody that's starting out to get their voice heard without needing a large backing behind them. But on the other side of the coin, it's very hard for them to make it. You don't suddenly, you're not going to break through and suddenly get this sort of like, you know, £500,000 advance from some big record company. It's not going to happen that way now.
And yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, when you look back at what happened with, well, Zeppelin is a case in point, isn't it? They got the record company behind there. They went out and gigged like crazy, and the money just started piling in. And it's interesting. It's interesting to think about how a Led Zeppelin would go today if they weren't signed to a big company. I don't know.
Yeah, but wasn't Peter Grant taking care of them and well, defending them?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. So I think they were maybe forerunners to what's happening today.
Mm.
It could be.
Yeah, it's a good, interesting point. And I've forgotten about the giant figure of Peter Grant. And he really did mould the whole thing for them and looked after them voraciously, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Mm. Okay, Chris, well, we're reaching the end now, so I suppose it's time for you to make any other comments you want to make or anything you want to tell people, or have we covered everything?
Yeah, well, I'm about to head out back to the garden.
Sure.
It's very hot here today.
Lucky you.
We live in a semi-arid climate, but I'd like to say hello to everybody out there who I've been fortunate enough to meet over the years. And if anyone who has met me and maybe perhaps has some photographs of me that I haven't shared them with me from either England or Canada, I'd be more than happy to take in or trade some photographs.
Mm-hmm.
And people can always look me up on MySpace or Facebook. I'm recently signing up for these social marketing arenas and keeping in touch with people. Actually, I lived in Germany for 3 years, so... at that time I was able to get over 97 to see Roy, and that was a lot easier. But some of these social meeting areas, I've been able to reconnect with some of my friends that I had in Germany. So that's been a great avenue to make connections with lost friends and the sort. But I'd be more than happy to hear from people.
Well, that's great. If you like, I'll put your... MySpace or Facebook details on the show notes as well. So if anybody that knows you wants to get in touch, they can easily track you down.
Oh, that'd be great, Paul.
Yeah, no problem at all. Okay, Chris. Well, I really enjoyed talking to you. And
thanks.
Yeah, have a enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
You do the same.
Will do. Yeah. Take care.
Cheers, Paul.
Bye. Thank you again, Chris, for doing that. Now, I spoke to Chris briefly after the interview and he said he felt maybe he hadn't been that interesting, but I found it fascinating talking about him coming over to England and helping Tony with the sound and meeting up with Roy and everything. Thanks very much. Now, the next track, as you might have guessed from listening to the interview, will be North Country from Live at Les Cousins.
North Country.
On to the A to Z of Harper next, and I've picked for K, Kangaroo Blues. Now, Kangaroo Blues, as far as I know, doesn't appear in studio form anywhere, but it's on the Flashes from the Archives of Oblivion live album, and I think it's particularly appropriate in some ways. One of the verses, I'm reading from the lyric book here, says, "Hey Mr. Nixon, hey Mr. Heath, can't you pull your pants up, boys? I'm standing underneath, feeling jumpy about society. All you have to do is replace Nixon and Heath with Bush and Brown."
Confusion rains down on us all from the blistering heights of reason. A shame we have no balls at all on which to scratch our fleas on. Or else we'd know 'twas Romeo, the spunky Holy Spirit, who pulls his foreskin to and fro and shoots the giddy limit. Hey, Mr. Nixon, hey, Mr. Heath, can't you pull your pants up, boys? I'm standing underneath, feeling jumpy about society. I'm feeling jumpy about society. Feeling jumpy about society. And down death wishing on my knees in the Holy Ghost of Los Angeles, praying for a reason, praying for a reason. Hey, Mr. Human, hey, bony dog, can't you see the next 12 warriors are raging in your heart? Are you feeling jumpy about this crazy society? Feeling jumpy about
for some feedback now, and I'm in the very privileged position of actually having two different voicemails. Here's the first one.
this is Tony Shaw ringing from Helsinki, and just wondering whether anyone else who's listening to these podcasts from this part of the world, or at least from abroad, I guess you have a listenership abroad. I just found the site this afternoon and was enjoying listening to, I think it was excerpts 9 and 10, and also noticed that there's another website, or a website, unofficial website of Roy's, maintained by a guy over here in Finland called R. or Koskinen, if you remember. I was wondering about your foreign sort of listeners, and whether people were interested in foreign artists who've covered Roy's songs. And it reminded me of a song which I came across when I moved over here a long time ago, in the 80s, which had been covered by a local artist with a wonderful name of Hector. And it was Short and Sweet. And his version of Short and Sweet is called something like The Junkyard of Dreams, or Junkyard of Hearts. Quite interesting sort of version, free translation, very close to the original idea, I think. Enjoyed your program, and look forward to hearing next month's issue. And as I said, if any other foreign listeners can offer any other interpretations.
Thanks a lot for calling in, Tony. I think it was Tony. I didn't quite catch the name properly on the voicemail. And thanks ever so much for the input about cover versions. Very, very interested in hearing about other cover versions. There is actually something coming up, hopefully in the next month or two, regarding a cover version, but I'll keep quiet about that for now in case it doesn't come off. But I'd be really fascinated to hear about this Hector bloke, and particularly to hear that Short and Sweet. I wonder if we can manage to wangle permission to play it. Who knows? But yes, be very interested to hear more about that from people. Okay, next voicemail. Well, is it a voicemail?
I just heard the latest from Stormcock.net. Would I say it was the best one yet? Well, maybe not, but then they've all been great, even when they come out a little late. This one featured Mr. Dave and Mrs. Sue in one hell of a long but fun interview. The month before, Bronco Lane got Mr. Davidson to explain.
Please explain.
In words the layman can understand, the mailing list that started this happy band, the Stormcock podcast for Harper News, the Stormcock podcast with interviews, the Stormcock podcast, the rarest of tracks, the Stormcast Podcock, the A to Z, but how you gonna do X?
Now, I absolutely cannot top that. That came in from Mick Bordet. I hope that's how I pronounce your surname, Mick. And it arrived in my email, and I played it, and I had to go off and have a glass of water and stop giggling. It was very good. And I would very much like to encourage this whole idea about musical voicemails if people are feeling creative. I think we could start something here. Now, just a bit about Mick. Mick has a band called Lunacy Board, and they had a track actually on the Splinters 3 project, which you'll know about if you've been listening to prior podcasts. But they're currently doing a 3 albums in 3 days project. That sounds insane to me, and it probably is, and that's why they're called the Lunacy Board. Find out more at www.lunacyboard.com. Now, does that voicemail count as a promo item or as something to dissuade people from ever investigating the website? You be the judge. Now, in terms of written feedback, didn't get very much for episode 10, actually, but it's not really a problem. Those two voicemails really made up for it, and I think we're in the kind of summer lull where everybody's busy doing other stuff rather than sat inside playing around with a computer. I got one from Adam Leonard, who said I was very pleased that we'd made it into double figures. So am I, Adam. Thanks very much. He says, I could listen to the Burnhams ramble on for hours. Great stuff and bang on the money about Robin Hitchcock. It was also surprisingly good to hear Jack of Hearts again. I've not listened to that one for ages and it really is a cracker. He also puts a link to some guitar tablature that he did for Jack of Hearts. If you're interested in that, go over to www.stormcock.net and look at the comments on the Roy Harper podcast episode 10, because there's a link there. So thanks a lot for that, Adam. And Fuzzy TNTH3, who's becoming a regular correspondent, and more power to you for that, says, thanks, Paul, for another excellent show, and thank you, Dr. Doom, for the tab. Of the guitar kind, not the inhaling kind. People from the north will understand that, and I only know about it because I studied in Newcastle for a year. Otherwise, I have no idea what you're talking about and think you're talking about acid or whatever. Read your comment, Paul, about the MP3 file format, and I wholeheartedly agree. Of late, I've been listening much more to my vinyl, and the difference is clear as day. Progress in this case has been a step backwards. Crazy. Well, it's interesting you should say that. I dig out vinyl from time to time, and it does sound better. It just sounds more organic somehow. I don't know, maybe I'm turning into an old git. Well, I already have, but, you know, exhibiting it in more ways. Traveller Man responded after a fair while, but he is out and about with his laptop and has trouble downloading the podcast, but he called up eventually. He says, the quality was as good as ever. I laughed aloud at the show nut at the end of, I think that was episode 9. I can't remember whether it was 9 or 10. I heard Water Sports for the first time ever, I think, and that really was a highlight. You're doing good work, Paul, and it's much appreciated. Well, cheers, mate. Being on the road and distant, the Harper podcasts are a little taste of something familiar, a reminder of home, perhaps a touchstone for me here in New Zealand. Each month it's like opening a Christmas present. You never know what's going to be inside, but there's always a pleasant surprise or two, possibly some unpleasant ones as well, I insert. On a technical note, the Harper tracks you play on the podcast sound better than the same tracks I've copied from CD to my iPod. How's that? I copy it 128 kilobits per second AAC via iTunes. I actually replied to that on the forum and said it's probably because I apply... I first of all do some volume boosting on some of the tracks because some of the earlier remastered albums were quite low in volume. But I also do some compression just prior to converting into MP3 for the podcast so that it basically all comes across a bit louder. And I hate doing that because it destroys some of the dynamic range. But this is what a lot of modern audio mastering processes are doing. And the audio files, the hi-fi nuts, are actually up in arms about it because you lose the dynamic range. But I'm doing that because I think that a lot of people are going to be listening to this in their car or on their iPod when they're on the move, and they need it fairly punchy so that they can hear what's going on. They're not sat at home in their sort of, what's the word, anechoic chamber? I can't remember. They're in their sterile listening room anyway with their massive hi-fi speakers. So, okay, that's the one. Traveller Man then responded actually with a couple of interesting links about how music's recorded these days and this whole compression thing I was talking about. A good one is www.turnmeup.org, worth looking at actually. Okay, that's all for feedback for this week, for this month in fact. I can't ever envisage doing this weekly, that was a bit of a slip of the tongue there. The next track will be another one that's a bit rare, I suppose. It's off Loony on the Bus, which was a hodgepodge of different bits and pieces. I'd already played Burn the World Part 1 on a previous podcast, but I thought it'd be fun to have the actual Loony on the Bus track. Here we go.
You don't mind if I sit next to you, do you, madam? Because I'm just another loony sitting next to you on the bus. Yes, I am, ma'am. 3,000 acres of forest a day, half a leather. Felled and killed, evaporates away heavy weather. Drifting north, the deluge breaks.
few Swedish lakes all together. And if you make a fuss, I'll get you faster because I'm Bulldog English Looney sitting next to you on the bus. Yes, I am, ma'am. I'm Bulldog English Looney sitting next to you on the bus. Yes, I am, ma'am. Downwind of you. I'm just a loony on the bus. 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 Yes, I am now. Yes, I am. Is it, mother? Breaking me down through my seatless mother. Lighting it to warm my feet, only mother. How we gonna cool it, mother? And don't make a fuss because of just a loony sitter next to me on the bus. Yes, I do, ma'am. Yes, I do, ma'am. Don't think you're just a loony sitter next to me on the bus. Yes, I do, ma'am. I'm just a loony on the bus. You're just a loony on the bus.
We're reaching the end of the podcast now, and playing us out over the credits is the other side of the single from Frudemare. This is Ogden's Nutcon Flake. So, credits. This podcast is issued under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 2.0 UK England and Wales license, which means that you can share it with others, but you can't change it, claim you made it, or charge for it. The Roy Harper music in this podcast is used by kind permission of Science Friction Limited and is not for copying or redistribution, and the same goes for the Frudemare single that I've been playing for you. I hope you'll go out there and buy it. It is actually a vinyl single, I didn't mention that before, and it comes on luminous green. It's a classic. If you've got a record player and you fancy a luminous green single, which has been likened to the colour of shower gel, that's the way to go. Now, links. www.stormcock.net is the home of this podcast, and you can find information there about all kinds of other Harper-related stuff. There are forums as well, and I fully encourage you to participate in chat with other similarly-minded people. There is a donations link on the page. If you feel like giving me a bit of cash to help with the podcast, go ahead, but it's by no means mandatory. That's fine. If you want to send in a voicemail on the telephone, plain old telephone, it's 01223 850282. That's +44 1223 850282. There is a 90-second limit on those voicemails at the moment for technical reasons. James, please help me sort this out. It's getting embarrassing, mate. Okay. Better would be to record an MP3 on your computer and email it to me, pd@stormcock.net. You can also email me with any other kind of stuff you want to bring up if you don't want to stick it on the forums. That's it for July. Playing us out this month will be Punch and Judy, a new song which only appears on the audio CD that's included in the Beyond the Door DVD. Hope you like it. Bye for now.
guess the first stone was among him, but he wouldn't come out to play. The greenhouse was broken, the flowers gone potty. Her mother was coming to stay. Oh, what a wonderful evening. What a wonderful day. Here on the edge of tranquility, wondering which way. He who would eke a week out on a piece of toast sank in the arms of his chair. The football was on the Discovery Channel. Her brains were on fire in the air. Oh, what a wonderful evening. Oh, what a beautiful day. Here on the edge of tranquility, wondering which way. Fate has brought us Jeffrey Chaucer, ducking stools, flying saucer, flying saucer, flying saucer. He preferred roundabouts, tiptoe reason. Her swings were much faster than soon. He did some blinking and slinking and drinking as she flew apart on the moon. Oh, what a wonderful evening. What a beautiful day. Here on the edge of tranquility, wondering which way. They lived in a higgledy-piggledy universe, having the time of their lives. She was the woman he'd taken for better worse. He'd had a number of wives. Oh, what a wonderful evening. What a beautiful day. Here on the edge of tranquility, wondering which way. Fate, fate has brought us Jeffrey Chaucer, ducking stools, flying saucer.